You're listening to the Talking Information Center. My name is Jean. Today's date is April 8th, and I'll be reading from the Sun Chronicle. North Attleboro voters return Stone and also elect Clotier to school board. School committee member Sarah Stone and Catherine Clotier won a four-way race for 2 3-year seats on the school board in Tuesday's annual town election. Stone was the top vote-getter with 517 votes, and Clotier received 472 votes. They edged out Francisco Palmarin, 192 votes, and John McAdam, 109 votes. Clotier is a former community school PTO member. The other school board seat expiring was held by Gideon Collette, a former local school administrator who chose not to run for re-election. I'm grateful to the voters of North Attleboro for their support and honored to continue serving on the school committee, Stone said. I'm looking forward to getting back to work for our students and schools. Those facing no challengers in the election were incumbents Tom DeForey and John Rupert for 2 seats on the Park Commission and Donald Cerrone for another term on the Public Works Board. All are 3-year terms. Nobody officially ran for a 3-year seat on the Electric Commission, and that office can be filled by a write-in candidate. Those were still being counted. Greg Ellis was the incumbent but didn't pull nomination papers for re-election. He was elected in 2024 for a 2-year term. Just 725, or 3%, of the town's 23,909 registered voters cast ballots at the North Attleboro High School poll. It was slow, town clerk Pat McNeely said, adding a low turnout was anticipated. Everything went very smoothly. Election Commission Chairman Neil Lambert anticipated a turnout of 6 to 8% because of the lack of races, but had hoped for 10% or better. Unlike last year when the town council was elected, this year's election was an off year. Attleboro Center hit with power failure. More than 1,000 National Grid customers in the city center are without power Wednesday morning in an area stretching from South Main Street northwest to Mechanics Pond. Besides residential customers, the area includes the Attleboro Public Library, Attleboro District Court, the Larson Senior Center, St. John the Evangelist School, the Attleboro YMCA, the Sun Chronicle, and a number of businesses. As of about 9:30 a.m., 231 customers were still without power. National Grid estimated restoration at 1 p.m. National Grid provides updates on the incident at nationalgrid.com/MA. Attleboro Council forces mayor into 2-year commitment to fund Capron Park Zoo. Capron Park Zoo dominated discussion at Tuesday night's city council meeting as residents urged it remain open and councilors approved a resolution pressing the mayor to keep her word. Last month, Mayor Kathleen DeSimone faced intense opposition from residents, zoo staff, and councilors after proposing to close the 90-year-old zoo in its current form and convert it into a nature reserve and wildlife rehabilitation center. A week ago, however, she reversed course, announcing plans to fund the facility. DeSimone had cited a $2.5 million city budget deficit when first proposing the closure. She now says the zoo will remain open in fiscal 2027, funded through a large allocation of free cash and increased support from the Friends of Capron Park Zoo, a volunteer organization. On Tuesday, Councillor Jay DeLisio introduced a resolution calling on the mayor to maintain zoo funding for 2 years, ensure concession stands and the gift shop are fully staffed and operational, expedite purchase orders, and guarantee no retaliation against zoo employees who advocated for keeping the facility open. Some counselors, including Vice President Laura Dolan and Sarah Reynolds, objected to the 2-year funding request, citing financial uncertainty and urging it be reduced to 1 year. They also pushed back on language prohibiting retaliation, arguing it was unnecessary and not reflective of the mayor's character. An amendment removing the retaliation clause passed. The amended resolution then passed in a 9-2 vote, with Dolan and Reynolds voting no. During Committee of the Whole, Jocelyn Verrier, president of the Friends of Capron Park Zoo, said the group is focused on ensuring the zoo's long-term sustainability. She said members planned to meet with the mayor Friday, but could not disclose details. Verrier said the Friends raised more than $20,000 in 2 days. If that continues, if everybody pushes that donate button on our website, we're golden, she said. Resident Eric Davis urged the city to reopen and improve concessions to generate revenue. Councillor Aaron Morrissey added that offerings such as cotton candy and popcorn could boost sales. Bristol County Sheriff and former Mayor Paul Hureau disputed claims that the zoo had gone underfunded in prior administrations. When I was mayor, I funded 6 zoo capital improvement projects in my last 3 years. The zoo wasn't neglected. The can wasn't kicked down the road. The zoo wasn't taking money away from other departments, he said. Any money from the Friends, grants, or donations helps the zoo on the margins. But no other city department is dependent on outside money to be sustainable. The zoo should not either. Resident Michael Madden questioned whether unplanned expenses, including the 2024 Manchester Reservoir water loss, a potential ransom payment following the city's November cyber attack, and dramatic payroll increases for some city personnel contributed to the city's tight budget. The city has not confirmed whether it paid a ransom for the cyber attack. Fallen tree causes leak in large propane tank in Taunton. A tree fell onto a large propane storage tank Tuesday, causing a leak. Firefighters responded to Winthrop Street about 7:15 a.m. for the reported leak. The tree had fallen onto the 1,000-gallon tank during a tree removal operation, fire officials said. The tank then began to leak propane. Firefighters were able to shut the tank's valve off. The tank was then removed from the area. High school project, bylaw for car dealerships, going before North Attleboro Planning Board. A planning board meeting Thursday is expected to be active, with board members potentially approving plans for a new high school and holding a public hearing on a proposed zoning bylaw to regulate new and used car dealerships. The meeting is scheduled to begin at 6:30 p.m. at the DPW headquarters on Whiting Street. Planning board members at their last several meetings have been reviewing plans for the new $287 million high school planned on the existing high school site off Landry Avenue. A special permit for a major site plan has to be issued. Aspects of the project that have been extensively reviewed include traffic, parking, drainage, and impact on neighbors. The public hearing could be wrapped up Thursday night with a possible vote as project representatives face a tight timeline to get work out to bid and underway. Construction of a new roadway is planned to get underway in June. The project is expected to take about 2 years, with the demolition of the current building dating to 1972 being carried out after the new school goes up to the south of that building. The new school is scheduled to open in the fall of 2028. The demolition of the old building will follow, and all site work should be done by September 2029. Voters last June overwhelmingly approved a tax hike to help pay for the three-story building. The state is picking up about $100 million of the costs. As for the zoning bylaw for car dealerships, town officials had been considering a bylaw that would prohibit new and or used car dealerships. Planning board members had held a public hearing on such a proposal, but voted 3-2 not to recommend the drafted bylaw to the town council, which has a final say on zoning changes. A revised bylaw would now require such businesses allowed in commercial zones to seek special permits from the planning board. Residents and town officials have wanted to get more control over the dealerships, which the town has been getting more and more requests for. Some existing dealerships have had more than the permitted number of vehicles on their property. There is also a strong desire by residents and officials to see more high-end commercial and housing development in town to bring in more property tax revenue. Some worry the town has been headed toward turning into an auto mile, as is located along Route 1 in Norwood. Attleboro area jobless numbers jumped in January. Unemployment rates across the area jumped in January, the latest state figures show. Jobless numbers in all 10 communities the Sun Chronicle covers were up compared to December. In all but one town, they were up compared to January of last year as well. Attleboro, the area's largest labor market, was tied with two other area communities for the highest unemployment number, 5.1%. In the city, that was up from December's 4.6% and level with the percentage in the same month last year, according to what the state calls seasonally unadjusted numbers for individual cities and towns released by the state's Executive Office of Labor and Workforce Development on Tuesday. Those are numbers not adjusted to account for seasonal variations in employment in some industries. The city's total workforce of 26,334, down slightly from December, had 1,346 people unemployed, nearly the same as a year ago when the workforce was 26,595. Norton's jobless rate was 5.1%, up nearly a full percentage point from January of 2025 and up from December's 4.6%. CCOG's rate was also 5.1% for January, up from 4.9% a year ago and 4.2% last month. Mansfield, at 4.3%, had the lowest unemployment rate in the area, but still up from December's 4% and last January's 3.9%. January jobs numbers released for the state last week showed Massachusetts' seasonally adjusted unemployment rate at 4.7%, a notch below the 4.8% rate originally reported for December, but equal to what state officials said was the federally revised rate for the last month of 2025, the State House News Service reported. The national unemployment rate stood at 4.3% in January. Why the unemployment rate remained steady in January, we have been monitoring economic signals and trends, particularly at the national level, that continue to present challenges and potential opportunities in the labor market for job seekers and employers, Mark Rembert, the Department of Economic Research chief economist, said last week. Rehoboth, with a rate of 4.4% in January, was doing better than a year ago, when the rate was 4.5% and the only area town to show improvement over the previous year. But it was still up from December's 3.7%. Foxborough, Plainville, and Wrentham were tied for the second highest jobless rates locally in January at 5%. In Foxborough, that was up from 4.8% last January. In Plainville, it was an increase from 4.7% that month, and in Wrentham, it was up from 3.9%, more than a whole percentage point and the sharpest increase in the area. North Attleboro at 4.4% and Norfolk at 4.5% had similar numbers for January, up from 4.1% and 4.4% respectively for the prior year. The preliminary February and revised January unemployment rates, labor force data, and jobs estimate for Massachusetts will be released on April 17th, and local unemployment statistics will be released on April 21st. Mass lawmakers call for Trump's removal over threat to destroy Iran. This is an insane man. Massachusetts lawmakers are calling for President Donald Trump to be removed from office over his Tuesday threat that a whole civilization will die if Iran fails to reopen the Strait of Hormuz. This is not normal. This is not just Trump being Trump. This is an insane man who is unfit for office and needs to be removed immediately, U.S. Representative Seth Moulton, Democrat from 6th District, a Marine veteran, posted to X on Tuesday afternoon. Republican Trump consumed the news cycle with a threat posted to his Truth Social site, asserting that Iran will never to be brought back again if it doesn't accede to his demands. I don't want that to happen, but it probably will. However, now that we have complete and total regime change, where different, smarter, and less radicalized minds prevail, maybe something revolutionary wonderful can happen. Who knows? Trump continued. We will find out tonight, one of the most important moments in the long and complex history of the world. 47 years of extortion, corruption, and death will finally end. God bless the great people of Iran. The threat comes after Trump previously said on Sunday that he would bomb Iran's energy infrastructure if its leadership did not open the strait, which is a main thoroughfare for the world's oil supplies, NBC News reported. Earlier Tuesday morning, the U.S. military struck Karg Island, which is critical to Iran's oil industry, CNN reported. U.S. Representative Richard Neal, a Democrat from 1st District, the top Democrat on the powerful House Ways and Means Committee, called on U.S. House Speaker Mike Johnson, Republican from Louisiana, to act immediately. This is beyond the pale. Enough is enough. Republicans have done nothing but enable the president's war of choice, and for what? We are almost 6 weeks into this unauthorized war. No objectives, Neal of Springfield posted to X. No endgame, just reckless rhetoric and needlessly risking American lives. Speaker Johnson needs to call the House back into session. Republicans need to stop their subservience, and Congress needs to assert its war power authority. U.S. Rep. Jim McGovern, Democrat 2nd District, offered a similar, albeit far more brief, sentiment. The President of the United States is a madman, McGovern posted to X. So did U.S. Representative Alana Presley, Democrat 7th District. This is a horrifying threat of genocidal war crimes. The lives of citizens and service members alike are at stake here, the Boston lawmaker said in a post to X. Congress must stop this war and remove Trump from the White House. Calls grew across social media on Tuesday for Trump to stand down under the 25th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. Among them was former GOP U.S. Rep. Marjorie Taylor Greene of Georgia, who was once a staunch Trump ally, and the radio talk show host Alex Jones, The Independent, reported. Trump is threatening war crimes of horrific proportions against civilians. It's deranged, U.S. Senator Elizabeth Warren, Democrat from Massachusetts, said on X. This madness must stop. Democratic lawmakers have also raised questions about the strategic aims of the joint U.S.-Israeli bombing campaign. Strategically, this war is a failure, U.S. Rep. Jake Auchincloss, District 4th, Democrat from the 4th District, also a Marine veteran, said during an appearance on Fox News earlier this week. U.S. Senator Ed Markey, Democrat from Massachusetts, called Trump an unstable warmonger. A war powers resolution will not be enough. Yes, we need to assert congressional authority and stop this illegal war in Iran. But Trump is clearly an unstable warmonger at odds with the will of the people, Markey posted to X. Removal is the top priority. No more war criminals in the White House. Karen Reed lawyers reveal fired trooper sent shocking messages, including to Canton's sergeant. Information from fired Massachusetts State Police trooper Michael Proctor's phone, dating back to 2013, shows the fired investigator sent shockingly misogynistic, racist, and homophobic messages to his friends, lawyers for Karen Reed claimed in a court filing on Thursday. Among those friends was Canton Police Sergeant Sean Good, who was placed on administrative leave by the department last November amid allegations of misconduct. Good was put on leave on October 24th after the misconduct was uncovered during an investigation into a former member of a different law enforcement agency, town officials said in a statement. An independent investigator was hired to conduct a thorough administrative investigation into Good, according to the statement. The same day Good was placed on leave, Norfolk County prosecutors revealed they found highly sensitive information during a search of Proctor's phone. Reed's lawyers confirmed the link between the two officers in a filing seeking permission to use the information from Proctor's phone in a forthcoming lawsuit against the town of Canton and the state police. These are statements to and from Proctor and his friends, including Canton Police Department Sergeant Sean Good, the motion reads. They are not private. They are not personal. They are, on the other hand, shockingly misogynistic, racist, and homophobic. Their filing backs up how another lawyer who reviewed the messages described them. In October, attorney Rosemary Scarpiano, who represents two murder defendants, Miles King and Sean Johnson, whose cases were investigated by Proctor, said the phone communications showed absolute bias. Both Proctor and Norfolk County prosecutors are opposing the request. Proctor's attorney claimed further use of the messages would be an invasion of privacy, while prosecutors called the request premature. Reed's lawyers dismissed those arguments, saying there was no reason to aggressively shield this non-privileged and non-confidential material. The lawyers note that despite their position about the secrecy of the material, they agreed to a strict confidentiality agreement with prosecutors. They also disputed the notion that the request was premature, writing that Reed was preparing a complaint and there was no reason to block her from using relevant statements and communications to ensure her lawsuit is as comprehensive as possible. That is particularly true considering that Reed can already use the communications in question in public filings in a wrongful death suit brought by the family of her boyfriend, Boston police officer John O'Keefe. A judge has not yet ruled on the request, and no hearings have been scheduled. Proctor was fired from the state police last March over his conduct in the investigation into Reed. during which he sent derogatory messages about her to coworkers, friends, and family. Defense attorneys whose clients had been investigated by Proctor asked a judge to force him to turn over his personal phone so it could be searched for evidence of bias in those cases. After doing so, prosecutors found information dating back more than a decade, despite representations from Proctor's then-lawyer that his phone auto-deleted information monthly. Proctor was in the middle of an appeal of the decision to fire him from the state police over his conduct in the Reed case when prosecutors revealed they found evidence of bias on his personal phone. He dropped the appeal when the union representing state police or troopers drew its support. Reed was acquitted last summer of all charges in connection with O'Keefe's death. She had been accused of running him over with her Lexus SUV following a night of drinking, then leaving him to die outside the Canton home of a fellow officer. Throughout the criminal case, Reed maintained she was set up by investigators, including Proctor. She has since filed a lawsuit against him and other investigators, as well as several witnesses who testified against her, accusing them of violating her civil rights. It is part of that litigation that she intends to sue the town and the state police. Reed also faces a lawsuit from O'Keefe's family. They have accused her of causing his death and inflicting emotional distress on them. Seekonk gets two new select board members. The town has two new members of the select board following Monday's annual town election. Robert Archambault, 903 votes, and Elizabeth Elmassian, 943 votes, were elected to 2 3-year terms, ousting board chairwoman Michelle Hines, who had 530 votes. And I'm afraid I have to stop there as we're out of time.